this pallbearer. Look at that horrible, hideous face. He's holding that urn. And look, he's not alone.
Everyone, and welcome to Dark Matter, the podcast where we don't make mistakes,
we bury them.
Now, to introduce your hosts for today's 50th episode special, I'm going to hand over to our special guest ring announcer, Howard Finkel, the bloke who used to do the wrestling. I can't do a Howard Finkel thing. Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Dark Matter's 50th episode special. Does that sound like him? No. Tonight's event will be the show's first ever Fatal 4-Way match. Introducing first, your host, me. That's John Richter, that's me, the normal host. And his co-host, weighing in at an impressive 4 billion video games played and reviewed during his lifetime, it's, of course, Liam Martin. Also competing tonight... is friend of the show, whose previous Dark Matter appearances include such classic episodes as Mortal Kombat, Dark Disney, and that one we never broadcast because we were too drunk, Hayden Killian. I'm not sure that actually came through, but he just opened the can near the
moment. I just cracked open the can. Sorry.
On brand.
Pathetic.
And I've lost my place. Hang on. And finally, making his Dark Matter debut, the Killian family's equivalent of Kane, by which I mean he's Hayden's younger brother, not that he's horrifically scarred or the mayor of Knox County, it's Jack Killian!
Hello. Hello.
Bringing the proceedings a bit more decorum. So that was a bit of fun, wasn't it? Did everyone enjoy that?
Not really.
It's fun.
I'll move on. So, yeah.
Is this being video recorded, by the way?
No.
No, that's all right then.
So you can
take your top back off.
Your pants off. It's 50th episode special. So we
He's doing it, fans.
Yes, he has actually taken his top off. Wow, that's unexpected. Looking good. Can't concentrate now. Yeah, 50th episode. Never thought we'd make it this far, because as you've already gathered, this show's a pile of old shit. But we thought we'd do something special and we couldn't think of what would be special. And then we thought having four of us on would be quite special. And also to talk about a subject that's very dear to our respective hearts, but also a bit different from the normal movies, video games, books and stuff. At this point, we'll maybe hand over to Hayden and Jack, who are the guests, so therefore they are pitching a topic for Liam and I to assess whether it's worthy of a place in the hallowed halls of the Hall of Pain.
Well, we thought we'd give you a real challenge this time. Obviously, you normally pitch against each other and you act as the custodians to the Hall of Pain, but I thought we'd tag team together this time and see if we could beat both of you.
We'd like the Brothers of Destruction, huh?
Well, yeah, that's what I brought my brother with me. Yeah. So there's a couple of hints in there. That and the massive overblown introduction that John did with his Howard Finkel impression. And we've gone for, The Undertaker.
You mean the wrestler, The Undertaker?
I mean the Phenom.
The Dead Man Walking.
Yes!
Yeah, exactly. He knows.
Very good.
Don't pretend like you don't know what I'm talking about. You all know who The Undertaker is. You can pretend like you don't like wrestling. You can say it's fake, but you all know who The Undertaker is. Come on. Let's get serious.
John Richter's a pussy.
That's like any of Paul Bearer insulting me from beyond the grave.
Yeah, I thought we danced around the idea of wrestling going into Dark Matter because it is a, some say it's a work of fiction.
Allegedly.
Exactly, you know, it's contentious. But if you're going to talk about wrestling as fiction, you're going to talk about darkness as one guy that stands out, stood the test of time. That's The Undertaker.
Papa Shango.
That is, of course,
Damien Demento.
Who's that bloke who used to eat worms?
The Sera.
Yeah.
Boogeyman.
The boogeyman, yeah. Well, maybe we should start off by explaining who The Undertaker is, just in case anyone's listening and doesn't know who he is.
I don't believe anyone doesn't know who he is.
He's properly famous, isn't he? Really long-running... Well, he's a professional wrestler. His real name's Mark Calloway. He was born in 1956, debuted in 1987 as Texas Red for World Class Championship Wrestling. Spent a few years having a load of crap gimmicks, including The Punisher, Dice Morgan, and Mean Mark Callis, before he signed for WWE, which was then called WWF because it was before the Panda beat them in the ladder match. And he debuted as The Undertaker in the 1990 Survivor Series. And from then on, he did 30 years of solid, amazing wrestling work and some incredible bits of dark fiction along the way. And then he retired in 2020, which was unexpected.
Or has he?
Indeed.
Let's hope so.
So, Hayden and or Jack, what are your earliest memories of The Undertaker? When did you first encounter the phenom?
So I was a fan of wrestling sort of from the early 90s. There was that big, around WrestleMania 8 time, 1992, Sky Sports kind of brought WWF, as it was then, to the British shores, and it became kind of big business, and there was a whole rush of support for WWF from our generation. I say our generation, blokes who are now rapidly approaching 40. Were sort of 10 at the time, and it was all, you know, your Roddy Pipers, your British Bulldogs, your Hulk Hogan, still just about Jake Roberts. Not my first kind of memory of Undertaker was actually when he just turned face, just turned into a good guy. That was WrestleMania 8's first kind of pay-per-view as a good guy wrestler. Jake the Snake, I think, was his opponent in WrestleMania 8. And then sort of getting into wrestling at that time, immediate history beyond that, sort of legacy of that Survivor Series 5th annual, where he won the title against Hulk Hogan, and the kind of early days Undertaker, I guess, was my initial memory of him.
Brilliant. What about you, Jack?
Well, so unlike you guys, I'm a bit younger, not quite pushing 40 yet, only pushing 30. I kind of grew up with wrestling being on because of Hayden, obviously living in the same house, older brother, having it on all the time. Had the funny gimmick of my dad somewhat looking a bit like The Undertaker, at least in his mind.
Oh yeah,
so became kind of like an iconic person in wrestling from that, so like look out for. And yeah, I guess it was like the early days of, I guess when I first started watching him, he'd already turned into the American Badass, which I'm sure we'll go on to later.
Dead young, aren't you? Blimey,
yeah, it was already past the first incarnation of The Undertaker into the American Badass, and then I have them. Vivid memories of the end of that gimmick and him turning back into the dead man gimmick, which is ace, to be honest.
Yeah. Glad that I'm sort of glad he ended up back with it again.
Yeah.
I suppose I sort of always thought, jumping the gun slightly, but just really quickly. So, in effect, he's had two main gimmicks, hasn't he? So both as The Undertaker, but he started off as basically a zombie. It's meant to be like a resurrected corpse that was kind of
a dead man.
Yeah, like slowly sort of trudging around the ring, but he was also indestructible and he could like rise up from any. And then he changed into the American Badass, which was like a sort of USA biker dude. Which maybe that's a bit closer to what he actually is in real life.
Sort of Confederate flag wearing, redneck,
Texas, drinking whiskey, driving Harleys and...
Listening to
Limp Bizkit.
Republican.
Yeah. But then they binned that off and he went back to being a Satan worshipper.
WrestleMania 20, I think it was, when he turned back into versus Kane.
Yeah.
When he turned back into the dead man.
He sort of kind of grew, didn't he? Like, as a initially, he was, when he first came in as an undead sort of heel character, he was just a really one-dimensional kind of, he just groaning, kind of slow-moving. And he kind of built on that slightly to become more human, more like he was, he had weak spots that could be
exploited,
that could be utilized. He found himself in peril more, I guess, which is kind
of agree
face.
More.
I was going to ask you what your earliest memory was, but you'd buggered off. Liam's back! Yay!
Like the great thing back. About the great thing about doing a four-person podcast, I have to do even less than usual. So it's great. More of these, please.
When did you first become an Undertaker fan, or are you not an Undertaker
well,
fan?
Well, we'll get to that. But I remember, I think, so I kind of started watching like British wrestling when I was really young, and I didn't have Sky Sports. Hayden, I think, was the first person to kind of introduce me to wrestling on a kind of weekly basis. But I do remember going to like, a friend of the family used to work at this like social club, and I was just sat at the bar all night. There was like an event going on, and I was just watching the TV, and it was when it was when Jake the Snake Roberts was kind of teaching the Ultimate Warrior like not to fear death.
Okay.
And then he turned on him with like bit him with a snake and everything. Then and it was a ruse between Jake and the Undertaker. And I just kind of remember that. That was kind of, I think, must have been the first time I saw him. And I also remember seeing him on the funeral parlor with Paul Bearer was hosting it, and he brought Ric Flair out. And then I've got a feeling this may be a totally different time, but I think Ultimate Warrior came out, but Undertaker was in a casket and came out and like hit him from behind. And
brilliant.
So I just remember seeing like these brief clips of him. Yeah. I mean, it was just so much, no offense to British wrestling, but it was just so much flashier and more fun. I mean, I've since seen these segments, but yeah, they were kind of my first.
Yeah, you can't resell them any better.
No, really not. Yeah. Well, no, because I'm trying to remember which one I saw first, and so that's why.
But we've got a dark fiction podcast because we like, you know, dark shit. So it's hard sometimes because the Undertaker, like all of us, have encountered the Undertaker when we were dead young. So is it that we like dark stuff because we got surrounded by dark things as kids, including him? Or do we like him because we were already interested in dark things and he was one? I don't know. I'm not quite sure which is true.
I wasn't that keen, to be honest.
Oh.
No, Liam was never really a fan of the Undertaker.
No, I was finding him a bit boring.
Because he's slow. Like slow moving.
But I did become a fan, which we'll get to, I'm sure.
This can't be the first time I saw him, because I remember watching this match already being a supporter of him. But the only thing I can remember is, do you remember when he fought Yokozuna in a casket match?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
Everybody came out and screwed him over and battered him and lobbed him in the casket, and he lost. And you know when you're dead young and you're really bothered about wrestling and you think it's real, so when the person you love loses, you're really upset and like, oh, this is not, I can't, tantrum. You know, crying and stuff. I remember that.
Then he didn't he not resurrect himself. Oh,
Smoke came out of the.
We can get to that. Basket. I guess we'll get to that later.
Raw Rumble 94, wasn't it?
One of his spots where he just came out of a video wall.
Yeah, appeared on a big telly and I don't know.
Another early memory I have: Survivor Series 5th annual when he won the title, which Hayden mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
That was another one, like one of the first kind of quite current recent pay-per-views I saw. I didn't see it live, but, you know, it would have been within like a few months. And he beat Ric Flair came out. I don't know, it just seemed really exciting. Ric Flair came out and like put a chair in the ring, and Undertaker tombstoned Hulk Hogan onto the chair.
Oh.
And he was champion, and the commentators were going crazy, and it just seemed really odd. And Ric Flair's title belt, he had the WCW belt, and they like pixelated it. And at the beginning of the show, Jake Roberts had the Cobra attack, you know, on Macho Man. And yeah, just really exciting. And it just seemed just bizarre, this, you know, sort of zombie guy winning the title from Hulk Hogan, who I wasn't like a big American wrestling fan prior to this, but everyone knew who Hulk Hogan was, and so he seemed like a genuine menace, a genuine threat, you know.
properly scary.
Yeah, scary dude. Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I was scared of him, but you know, I was quite well versed in the world of horror by this point. Were you scared of him, Maiden?
No, I was his friend. He befriended me. I liked him. I was a fan. I had Undertaker pajamas when I was a kid. I just showed him.
Jack, I feel like you wouldn't have been because you saw him more in that kind of attitude era.
Yeah, like I said, I think with it kind of already seeing him as the American Badass so early, and that was.
And then you saw the other stuff in kind of retrospect. Yeah. What about you, John? Were you scared of him?
I think I just really liked him. I think he was pretty much my favorite wrestler at the time.
What was your first memory then? The Yokozuna match.
All I can remember is a Yokozuna match.
Okay.
Which is slightly later than Us Boys, because I think
slightly later. Yeah,
started watching it a little bit later, but
it's probably worth thinking. Like, I think he's obviously going to be less scary when he's a good guy, when he's a face.
Yeah, yeah.
Which he has spent long periods of his career as a face, which I guess to the kind of to a non wrestling fan would seem quite strange, because you think like, okay, you're trying to explain to somebody who doesn't really like wrestling or understand it, but. Is these characters, is this bloke who's this, is this bloke who's an undead Undertaker? Well, he must be a bad guy. No, actually, he's a good guy. Well, why have they done that with him? Doesn't really make any sense.
Like, you can imagine a match between like Undertaker and Kurt Angle, and it'd be like, oh, one of them's an All-American hero and an Olympic gold medalist. And
medalist.
A Satan worshipping corpse. Which one's the good guy? The latter one?
Yeah.
And he wasn't really a heel, which for non-wrestling fans is like a bad guy. He wasn't really a heel for that long when he came in. It just seemed like longer because we were kids, maybe.
Yeah, but
he came in at Survivor Series 90. He won the title at 91. And then by WrestleMania 8, which was a few months after that, he was already a face, a good guy.
He's already turned face.
That's not that long, really, is it?
Year and a bit, possibly.
One of the things that surprised me loads, because I think you showed me this, Hayden, is that so you did an impression of him earlier, Liam, was his manager... Paul Bearer, which is one of the best puns ever. It's a little, fat, high-pitched bloke. He was basically a funeral director, was his...
Really fat.
Just
wider than he was tall.
Yeah.
White, incredible physique.
Just everything about Paul Bearer was... And as well, sorry to jump right, when you go back and you remember this old, fat bloke with a tash going, oh, the Undertaker is here. He was younger than us.
Yeah.
When he was doing this, about 34.
And if I'm not mistaken, he actually was a trained mortician.
Yeah, that's right.
Paul Bearer in real life was a trained
brilliant
mortician. So he wasn't even a character at that point, he was just playing himself.
Just his real self. And he wasn't unbelievable as it sounds. When The Undertaker debuted, that was not his manager, he had a different manager.
No, his Brother Love, wasn't it?
Brother Love.
Bruce Brother Pritchard. Love, yeah.
Brother Love's gimmick was he was like a preacher, like a I love you kind of.
Although Bruce Pritchard denies it had any religious connotations.
Speak. He's like a televangelist. Kind of hokey.
Yeah.
So he's a hokey quack. Televangelist, a hokey quack televangelist who'd resurrected a corpse to fight for him.
For me, it doesn't really fit, does it?
No.
I kind of, when Brother Love, Bruce Pritchard has explained it, you know, he was like all about love and The Undertaker was like, I don't know, his polar opposite. I don't know, it just doesn't really work, does it?
So yeah, Brother Love was one of those kind of insincere heels. Like, you know, we have their like gimmick is, hey, I just love everybody. And it means, no, you don't. We see through your BS. Then why would you have an Undertaker as your charge? Doesn't make any sense.
Great. But a great bit of dark fiction, eh? Tenuous attempt. But yeah, Paul, I don't know when Paul Bearer first came on the scene. He was a big part of The Undertaker's whole story. And then the other part, I guess, maybe mentioned while it's cropped up, and Jack, you mentioned him earlier, was Undertaker's alleged brother, part of the Brothers of Destruction, which was Kane. He was another, but like The Undertaker, basically an idea that just shouldn't have worked and should have been complete garbage drivel. But somehow...
This is sort of, fast forward like 5 or 6 years, isn't it? Maybe even 7 years of him sort of getting a bit stale. And then we found out that... Paul Bearer already left? He'd already left Undertaker.
Yeah, he turned on him. Was it SummerSlam 96, the Boiler Room match?
Yeah.
Okay. He turned on him then and went to Mankind.
Undertaker. Yeah, Terminator, yeah. Went to Mankind, and then kept alluding to this kind of dark secret that the Undertaker had, like a cover-up. The Undertaker was sort of, I don't know, I'm just being a gesture, which you won't be able to see on this podcast, but like sort of a bit sort of worried about how
don't
it might come out.
Don't tell anyone about it.
Yeah, what does he know? What's he got on me? What's Paul going to say next? And it turned out he had a brother that died in a fire, but didn't die.
Oh, did Paul Bearer had secretly been looking after him on the day when he needed to use him against the Undertaker.
And he was Paul Bearer's son.
Oh, yeah.
Was that later that they added that bit?
Yeah.
So Undertaker Paul Bearer's son as well, then?
If no. Paul Bearer slept with Undertaker's mum.
Oh, so they
had sex with your mama or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. They share a biological mother, but Paul Bearer is Kane's dad. That's the canon, is it?
That's what Bearer would have you believe, yeah.
Oh, I don't trust that guy. I didn't actually know that. I'd missed
all
that.
All the genes definitely come from the mum then.
Therefore was Kane's mum 7 feet tall.
Rude and 20 pounds.
One of the many things we haven't mentioned is obviously the Undertaker just physically, you know, wrestlers are big lads, as we all know, but he was a particularly impressive specimen. What is he, about 6'10" or something?
Build height was 6'10".
Probably a bit
328 pounds.
But he's an enormous man, isn't he? He's like a comic book character come to life, just looks incredible with like iconic kind of black stuff and his wide brimmed hat.
Yeah.
But for Kane, they went with obviously fire, so they went with red clobber. But he had a mask on, which somehow made him seem even cooler. And they found another massive bloke to play him, didn't they? So
I think what was really cool with Kane as well is that he's slightly bigger than the Undertaker. Yeah. So when he first came out, it was like, oh my god, someone's even bigger than. And it's not that in wrestling we haven't seen bigger people than the Undertaker, because there have been the Giant Gonzalez, etc. But
yeah,
it just seemed like this opposite force. It's like, oh my god, this guy's even bigger than the Undertaker. The little brother, that's bigger, stronger, etc. Oh, so,
and you sort of noticed,
kind of like us.
Yeah,
better, stronger, better, faster. But you notice a lot, don't you? Like, I guess, sort of notice it, even when you're really young. Like, they're putting out these blokes, these, you know, wrestlers, and they're trying to have it that these people are unstoppable, you know, fighters. But some of them were just kind of out of shape, to be honest. Whereas The Undertaker and Kane were actually an incredible nick. So they looked, I don't know, I can't do any better than they look like comic book people come to life to me.
Yeah, they were really good shape, especially at the time, like you said, where some of the guys would, especially the bigger guys, were kind of just, oh, if you're big, it doesn't matter if you're in shape.
Yeah,
kind of, it's what it felt like in that era, where there was just, like I mentioned before, like Becerra, who was just a massive, massive bad guy.
Oh yeah, formerly Mabel,
just enormous. Like, and just anybody who was just big, they didn't seem to care too much about their health.
So like, they were like attractions, weren't they? Like Giant Gonzalez, even he wasn't necessarily overweight, like the other ones we mentioned, but he just sort of
really
huge, ungainly. Looked like he was about to die and then did.
Well, this goes back to my point of why I kind of wasn't really that big of a fan of Undertaker, because obviously he came in, he debuted when we weren't properly watching it. And that was that was quite exciting, though, looking back, what he was doing, you know, interacting with Hogan and Jake and Ultimate Warrior, etc. But then he turned into a good guy. And basically the formula was he would just fight even bigger blokes, because how do you put the Undertaker in danger? You know, you in wrestling, it's all about telling stories, isn't it? And like David versus Goliath is like the classic thing, like a big guy goes up against a little guy, and the little guy is usually the good guy, and the big guy is the big bad guy. But how do you make Undertaker, you know, vulnerable?
Yeah.
So they always had like Yokozuna, just bigger guys, and Giant Gonzalez. But that kind of led to his most of his matches being quite shit,
really,
and boring,
really poor.
And where he was a good guy as well, I just find him a bit dull, really. And like I said, his matches were always really crap until got to like 96 when he started feuding Mankind, Mick Foley, which is when Mick Foley was actually a bit smaller than Taker, although he is quite tall actually. Foley, he doesn't always look it because he sort of crouches over a bit. But the matches were actually really good, and they had, they kind of, you know, incorporated more kind of weapons and things, and it was quite exciting for the time. Which I hadn't really seen anything like it, and I think that's when I started becoming a fan again.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it, because, I suppose you've pointed out something I've forgotten really, which is that until our point in from our point in time, which is usually probably late 90s, Undertaker became this incredible athlete, diving clotheslines, walking on the top rope. I know he did that before, but his matches were really good, and his athleticism, such a big bloke, is incredible. Whereas earlier in his career, like you say, it was partly the character and partly his inexperience and partly the opponents he had. They were just these plodding.
Yeah, I mean, phase. In fairness to him, it was probably the opponents more than anything.
Yeah,
Giant Gonzalez was like 7'5" or something, wasn't he? And he could barely move. I think he fought King Kong Bundy at one WrestleMania, who was like kind of past it by that point. Yokozuna was obviously getting just bigger and bigger. Mabel, as Jack mentioned, who was, you know, just massively overweight. Diesel, who was never really, was kind of cool, but never really a great in-ring performer, was he? Unless he was fighting like a little guy. So yeah, just for years, he was just fighting these big guys and having these
kind of thought Diesel matches. Was a good hand.
Yeah. Well, that's what he wants people to say. So
he's got a Magic Mike.
So Undertaker's kind of arguably, and with Kane as well, kind of the most athletic of the big guys. Like you were saying, it was kind of like a bad billing before, because I think they just didn't appreciate that he could move the way he does, and putting it, they wouldn't, you know, think to put him versus some smaller opponents, because traditionally it would have just been, well, he's the big guy who's going to smash the small guy in this like slow, like you said, kind of like rolling around type way. But yeah, I think once they realize the potential he has with how much athleticism he does have, it definitely led to some really great matches.
There's a good segue there into the some particular matches, but just really quickly, I just wanted to make one last point about Kane and Paul Bearer. Someone may remember this more specifically, but there was a point in time, I want to say in the noughties, because you sort of start watching wrestling again, stop watching, start again, and I'd started again. Always draws you back in. And Kane, by this point, he'd been through the, he's had a mask and can't speak. Then for a while he was, you know,
speaking through a thingy.
Then for a while he was just speaking in a weird voice. Then he had no mask, but terrible fake makeup to make him look fake burnt. And now we're at the point where he was just a bald bloke and with a normal voice. And he was being evil. And he was like, you know, tearing up the joint. He was breaking people's legs and setting people on fire and, you know, real evil villainous. And Paul Bearer and The Undertaker were like on hiatus. We hadn't seen him for ages. And then Paul Bearer brought The Undertaker, if I remember rightly, Paul Bearer brought The Undertaker back. As the only thing that could stop Kane's.
This was WrestleMania 20, where he turned back from the American Badass into the Dead Man. And then there's a really, like, if you go on YouTube, there's a ton of like epic Undertaker entrance moment videos, and that clip is always in there of Paul Bearer sort of like at the ring summoning him back, and Kane looking on in disbelief that he's actually there.
Like, I would have been, I don't know, what, early 20s, a fully grown man with a job by then. And seeing Paul Bearer going like, oh, yeah. It was like, still, like, even now I'm getting all excited.
I was out of the league. I didn't really watch it then. So I don't recall that at all.
We watched it at your house. I'm sure we did.
We watched a lot of wrestling.
Maybe not.
Possibly. No, I think it was WrestleMania 25.
Yeah, well,
So was the concept that Undertaker was going to take him to the woodshed and, like, you know, teach him.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah.
Just listen, put him back in line.
Yeah. I think it's just this, the concept that, like, the only person Kane is scared of was The Undertaker. But, oh, he's dead, so it's fine. He's actually dead. And then, obviously, WWE did the usual lead up of, you know, weeks of, like, whispers and Kane being like, oh, wait, is he going to come back? Oh, no, he's not going to come back. He's not going to be there.
Kane's being being unruly. And the only one man who can contain
him out.
His dad, Paul Bearer.
Yeah, it's funny.
Was he always, because he spent, there was loads of Undertaker doing a comeback that used to happen. Was he always out because they just scripted it that way because they thought the comebacks were good? Or was he out because he was always injured all the time?
I think wrestling just likes to have comebacks, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
I'm good, though.
From what I gather, it was injuries is what mostly, because he was so big in his joints and he just sometimes needed time off. That's from what I gather. I'm sure there were times where it was just like, come on,
I think
have a break.
He lends himself to a comeback as well,
yeah,
because
definitely.
Of the character he is and his music, for example, and like so much about him that leads to like a, oh my God, type moments that they love. So I think they definitely, on top of that he was injured and needed to have time off, it always led to, oh well, have 6 months and then we can bill you in for this thing and it'll blow everyone's minds.
Do you remember when the Million Dollar Man was putting together the Million Dollar Corporation or the Million Dollar Dream Team or whatever it was called, and he had The Undertaker, and everyone was horrified that The Undertaker had sold out, but it was clearly a different bloke. It was like a fake Undertaker. And maybe you thought at the time that, oh, this is WWE is trying to, you know, trying to trick us. But then they worked that into the story, and then at whatever event it was rumored that the real Undertaker was going to come back and beat up the fake one. And they had Leslie Nielsen live on the show, was like searching for clues, like, where's the Undertaker? It was Leslie Nielsen creeping around the stadium.
Well, that was his first match back from the Royal Rumble that you remember. So when he
died.
Yeah, and then that was his first match his back.
Resurrection. Yeah. He was ace. And I used to like make him good as well.
But again, it was a shit match, though. But
you're right. It was
the funny thing is about wrestling. This probably Undertaker is a good example of this, though. It does get compared to like a soap opera at times. You know, like people say, it's like a live action soap opera with sports entertainment and all that. But in soap operas and in American sitcoms, sometimes you have different actors playing the same character. Wouldn't it be better if they just, rather than trying to keep the likes of Undertaker and Sting alive forever, if you want to keep that character going, just get a younger bloke to play the same bloke.
Remember they did that with Razor Ramon and Diesel, though, when Razor and Diesel left, they brought in
fake Razor and
really shit knockoff versions. The theory being, well, we own the gimmick. And the gimmick's bigger than the actual people portraying it. And he's like, no.
Fucking I mean, you have to get somebody
better. So maybe, I don't know.
They tried it and it failed. Well, I guess the segue I alluded to earlier and now have made much more clunky is talking about some of the Undertaker's later, much better, great, iconic matches. Is, of course, he had the famous streak. So every year, WrestleMania takes place. We're up to WrestleMania 30-odd now. It's been going for nearly 40 years. And he hasn't fought at every WrestleMania, but most of them. And up until a point in time, a few years ago, controversially, The Undertaker had never lost at WrestleMania. Now, I know it's like, well, that's no big deal because it's fake and scripted, so why is that a big deal? But it's they didn't plan that. They didn't have like a 35-year plan. It just for whatever reason, the storylines they were writing at the time of WrestleMania lent themselves to The Undertaker winning, and then it happened again. And then I think they probably didn't even realize for a while. And then
it was like maybe like 6 or 7, like they realized then that he just never lost one.
He had the longevity
to sort of stay around.
Yeah.
It just so happened that he'd always booked to win that in that particular pay per view. Like it sounds massively impressive, which it is, but there are other, you know, like SummerSlams and Royal Rumbles and stuff, he has lost that. It's not like he's been unbeaten for that long. But his WrestleMania streak, which obviously is the flagship event of the whole of wrestling.
Yeah.
He remained unbeaten for a really long time. Who can remember all of his WrestleMania opponents?
I can't remember any.
Nobody. I remember all of them.
I could have a go.
Superfly Jimmy Snuka. WrestleMania 7 was his first match.
Yeah. Then Jake Roberts.
WrestleMania 8.
Then Giant Gonzalez.
WrestleMania 9.
Then he wasn't 10. At 10, I don't think. I think he was out for 10.
11.
King Kong Bundy.
12 was Undertaker. Diesel. When was Undertaker? 13.
No, that was SummerSlam.
That's SummerSlam. Yeah. SummerSlam 93.
12 was Diesel. 13 was Psycho Sid.
Wow. Yep.
14 was Kane.
God,
and this is where I'd get a bit hazy.
Big names.
I'm not even sure if he was in 15. Where I'd get hazy, to be honest.
Big Boss Man.
I could tell I could tell you some of the people, but just not. I'm not sure about the order.
Yeah, Triple H. Ric Flair, Triple H, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, he fought Shawn Michaels twice. He fought Triple H twice, I think.
He fought Big Rick Show Flair. And A-Train in a 2-on-1
Big Show and A-Train.
Handicap match.
Yeah.
In one of the...
Oh, 2003.
Yeah. That sounds terrible.
A vintage WrestleMania performance.
But probably the most memorable, you guys may disagree, but a well-regarded set of matches was his two matches against Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, they were definitely. Actually, I think they're his best matches easily. Yeah. But yeah, I would put that down to Shawn Michaels.
Oh, definitely. He that was when
says in interviews that he believed they were his best matches as well.
Yeah,
I'd stopped watching wrestling for about 10 years, and then out of the blue, I was back in Gloucester for some reason. I don't know why. But WrestleMania 25, I knew was on, and Liam and I and Jack, we don't know if you're there, but your dad was certainly there. We watched WrestleMania 25. Like
he was fighting at it.
He was A-Train. And even though I'd not watched it for 10 years, I had no context at all. Like, it's amazing, isn't it, how you're watching it? Like, you just immediately know you're sucking straight back in.
Yeah, that was a good one to watch. To draw you back in, that was a good one. Because
It seemed relevant. 25 years, they knew they were going to do something big.
Yeah. And were they making a thing out of the streak then?
Big
versus Korea, wasn't it?
Yeah,
that was the one after.
That was the one after.
Yeah.
It was almost like Shawn Michaels was trying to say, I want one more chance to end your streak.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
But stumbling around, barely able to stand up. But he recognised he was so old and past it that if he, alleged it was the story at the time, that if he, in order to earn that second chance to beat The Undertaker, he had to put his career on the line. And so they used to do this a lot in wrestling, right? So this is where they tricked me and got me. Maybe I'm stupid for falling for this. So they often used to try and make a match seem more meaningful by having a bloke say his career's on the line, which used to ruin the match because obviously a 31-year-old wrestler is not going to retire forever and never wrestle again. So you always knew that this bloke who's saying his career's on the line is going to win. So I just fully, fully believe that the that Shawn Michaels was going to win that second match, and therefore the streak would be broken, and he would go on and continue his career. And then he just didn't. He just lost and properly retired forever, which I didn't expect to happen. It was quite emotional.
Well,
if I recall,
it wasn't really forever, was it? But
it never is. Yeah.
It never is.
Kind of to go back, sort of chronologically. We're talking about how I wasn't really a fan of Undertaker, and then he had those matches with Mankind. He also, quite near to this, I think about a year later, 97, just literally the night Kane was introduced, had another really, really famous match with Shawn Michaels, which is another absolutely brilliant match. The Hell in the Cell, first ever Hell in the Cell match. And that is another really, really good match.
It's a great match, and that's where Kane debuted, wasn't it?
Exactly,
that was.
So really significant as well. And his matches against Bret Hart. I think when WWF back then, when they kind of stopped caring about everyone had to be a big 6'5" bodybuilder, that's when he kind of, like, his matches with Kurt Angle were really good as well. And so I just think from that era onwards, he did kind of go up in my estimations. And just, we were talking about Shawn Michaels, that was another just absolute classic.
Yeah, very much.
They definitely sort of finally realised that him versus a small bloke who could do a lot of the, jumping around, making him look really ridiculously powerful, that was just such a better formula than two big, slow-paced blokes just bumping into each other.
Yeah. I mean, his matches against Kane were okay as well. They weren't terrible.
No.
But he had 4 years on the trot of doing two matches against Shawn Michaels and two against Triple H, which were pretty good. Like, even though the two against Triple H, both good, they're like 30 minutes long.
I seem to remember there being a lot of sledgehammer based.
Yeah.
To get the sledgehammer off each other and then.
Yeah.
And the last one was when he went 20-0 against Triple H. So the last Triple H match was his 20th win.
Yeah, because he beat Triple H three times at WrestleMania then, didn't he? Because he beat him once, late 90s, early 2000s,
Well, I suppose you can't talk about the streak without talking about its controversial ending. And I think it had got to a point where the streak was such an established thing that you just thought it was just, why would he ever lose? Why would they throw this away? So he's obviously going to win. He was booked to fight Brock Lesnar. who at the time, people probably forget this, but they'd sort of brought him back out of the MMA wilderness. Probably MMA fans don't consider that to be the wilderness, but, you know, from a wrestling perspective. And they booked him quite badly. And I think he lost his first match against John Cena. And everyone was like, oh, what? Why? You brought Lesnar back, made a big deal out of it, and then he lost. Like, what? Who's scripting this? So it had almost had a really sort of crappy build-up. No one thought Lesnar was a threat. Everyone thought The Undertaker's just going to beat him. And, like, no one was that bothered about the fight. And then Lesnar just battered him and pinned him. It was really weird.
Yeah, this is WrestleMania 30, wasn't it? When, this is when I just moved to London, just got back into wrestling. This is kind of Survivor Series before that, the summer before that. So summer 2013,
I guess. Yeah, that summer, I remember that, when Daniel Bryan won the title. And
That SummerSlam. So. And then WrestleMania 30 was the first WrestleMania I was fully back into wrestling. We went to watch in Belushi's and Shepherd's Bush, Dave, you remember?
I do.
Cracking night. Went dressed as the New Age Outlaws. I think that was
I had me little it was shorts on.
It's a fancy like dress effort. Who won the card as well?
Man.
It just like I kind of was getting to grips with the storylines and what happened. I seen Lesnar come back, and just in terms of like doing your predictions for the card, like who's going to win, like it was such a nailed on Undertaker victory. Like this, they won't piss the streak away on Lesnar, because like he's been misbooked, he's a bit shit. I thought they were trying to prove a point that MMA was a bit shit by making him look a bit crap, and then it was just, that's why it was so shocking that he lost. And then since then, Lesnar just went on ever since, he's just been
absolute tear.
Yeah, talk about giving somebody a rub, like that has been the rub of all rubs, isn't it?
Look into the background of it, there was a few moments I kind of led up to hinting that it could happen, though, because previously to this, The Undertaker made an appearance at a UFC event. Don't know if you guys know that. He was in the crowd at one of Brock Lesnar's matches and did this thing where he was sort of like getting interviewed by this guy, and then Brock Lesnar walked past at the end of like his match. This guy's like interviewing The Undertaker, like, oh, you're here to watch, blah, blah. You know, out of character interview, which is at the time very rare for The Undertaker to do.
It's true, yeah.
And then Undertaker kind of like turned to Brock as he walked past and kind of said to him, do you want to go? Do you want to go? And then Brock like kind of looked back, and this at the time was like a big deal on the internet. Like, it was like,
I remember,
And that was kind of like the lead up to like maybe showing that this could happen.
Something happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, Taker did always fancy himself as an MMA guy, didn't he?
He was the first guy in wrestling gloves. Yeah, to bring the gloves in. He's been a big fan of it, again, according to the many interviews that I've watched with him.
He's been a big slow striker.
Yeah.
And he started using like ground based submissions a bit, didn't he?
Hell's Gate.
His game.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'd have been any good. Would he have been like a Lesnar style success?
Nah, he's a pussy, mate. An absolute pussy.
I think Lesnar.
You were pitching for him.
I mean, yeah.
An absolute pussy.
You hear him talk, though.
I got to admit, actually, this is complete segue, but. When was it? Like last year?
I think it was last
probably year. Around when he retired. They did those documentaries about The Undertaker, like came across a little bit, wiener.
He had like a
wiener, definitely.
Like he had like his self-esteem seemed really low, and he seemed to need constant validation. Yeah. And the matches were good, and it was just a bit surprising. Because like you say, he did such a good job of being in character for so many years that you kind of believed a bit that he was kind of a weird dead body.
And even outside of the character, you always heard these stories about he was like the locker room leader, and they have this thing called Wrestler's Court where it's like backstage stuff. If you like
bullying
something, it basically
sounded like he was a big scary bully backstage.
But if you fucked up, like if you spilled a drink on someone's luggage and stuff or some shit like that, they'd have like a little wrestler's court, and you know, you'd have to buy everyone a beer or something like that.
You get beaten up.
Depends who you were, doesn't it?
Give somebody £1 million, I get your head kicked in.
So it sounded like he was a hard man backstage. And in fact, this is a good story. WrestleMania 14, it was when Stone Cold won the title for the first time. and he beat Shawn Michaels to win it. And Shawn Michaels, this was when he was like properly, you know, a bit of a drug prick. Addict and just a bit of a prick, basically. And there were rumors that he wouldn't do the match, like he, you know, not do business, as they say, like try and fuck it up. So apparently, Undertaker came to the backstage area, just where the gorilla position, just where they go out through the curtain, and he stood there wrapping it. This is the story of it, but he's wrapping his fist up with tape, like to like you know symbolize that he would beat up Shawn Michaels if he didn't do it. But he's wrapping his fist for the entire match. Like, that's kind of the story. He's like, he was just there the whole time wrapping his wrap.
Still going.
But yeah, saying? So he was considered like a.
He's got so much tape that his hand's massive. He was you got the impression from what you heard that he was this like behind the scenes hard man, but then the documentary comes across this real mild mannered, quite
absolute pussy.
Even his voice sounded a bit weedy.
Hey man, I'm the the street for so many years.
Guy,
I got a bad back and bad knees. Boy, my wife keeps making me wrestle, even though I'd love to quit.
Vince, what? Tell me I was good, Vince.
You sucked.
Oh no.
Can I please quit now?
Just to quickly
get your ass back in there.
Just to quickly bring it back onto the topic of the streak. I just want to know what your guys' point like views are for whether you think the streak should have ended, like not necessarily how it did against Lesnar, but should it have ended at all, or should he have retired with it intact, do you think?
At the time, I thought they pissed it away completely. I thought it was a really bad idea. They should have kept it. But looking at what Brock Lesnar's become, I think if you're going to end the streak, they've done the best possible thing with it, because they've made him... I mean, Lesnar's a made man, isn't he? Like, and that it is largely down to that. If they hadn't ended the streak, Brock Lesnar wouldn't be who he is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I agree with that. At least when they ended it, they did the right thing with Brock and made him like an absolute unstoppable monster. They haven't like, he was
pissed hot away
for 1 month and then gone. So I agree with you there. However, I do also kind of think that his final match should have been when somebody beat him and ended the streak. And that should have been his retirement match.
That's a good point.
And they've hinted at it a couple of times where he's, before he actually retired, where I think when Roman Reigns beat him. So again, now he's lost a couple of matches.
Lost twice, He's lost two.
Well, he bounced back the next WrestleMania and beat Bray Wyatt.
And then he beat CM Punk, didn't he? I mean,
my view is Bray Wyatt should have beaten the streak, because I think Bray Wyatt, with the Bray Wyatt character, they had a natural successor to The Undertaker, a supernatural kind of satanic monstrous character who...
The boring bastard.
Yeah. I think he's shit as well.
But and it's gone horribly wrong now. And Bray Wyatt's ended up leaving WWE, hasn't he? So he's gone. But at the time, I just felt if he could have benefited...
and released.
Job dropped. But he could have benefited massively from that rub, and they could have made something out of him.
I agree, you know,
Don't you think Lesnar's done more with it than anyone else?
Definitely.
I think you're right.
Just wish that that had been the end for him. Or maybe he did that AJ Styles as like a one final, because that was kind of different to his other matches.
That was awesome. We'll get to that. I think that what Liam's saying about pissing it away on somebody being hot for a month, I think that's what would have happened to Bray Wyatt. I think Bray Wyatt would have beaten
I totally agree.
He'd have been hot for, they wouldn't have made as much of it. It'd have been,
have
and then
that,
before you know it, it'd have just gone again. Whereas with, you don't always necessarily go back to, when you see Lesnar come out now, like he's recently come back, he looks cool as shit, and he's, you know, his music plays, everyone pops. You don't automatically think back to, oh yeah, this is a guy to beat the Undertaker. It's not like a direct link, but I do think that where he is now is based on a series of events that have happened since
100%,
he on the street. I don't think anybody else could have had the same
benefited
level
as much from
exactly.
I think you. What do you think, Jack?
I guess in my eyes, I just think it would have been cool if they hadn't have broken it.
Yeah,
if he'd have somehow managed to retire, and it was just the one thing in wrestling that was you know, immortal. But again, I do think out of everyone who could have beat him, I think having Brock Lesnar beat him is probably the best person to have beat him. To be honest, they did it in a way where it was like that shock value, because like Hayden was saying, up until it, we didn't really, and I never
really
would have
didn't
thought.
See it coming.
I just assumed,
didn't see it
like,
coming.
And especially because like, you know, at that point, like probably in the five matches before that, you just always think, well, he's going to win. He's going to win. Of course, he's going to win.
All you
to the
think
point where you almost don't bother watching the match, because it's like, well, you know he's going to win.
Or you think when he's going to lose, it's going to be against somebody who's going to, a younger up and coming guy who's good. But Lesnar appeared sort of washed up at that time.
Yeah. Like he'd already been like in the company for ages, and he went out and then he did MMA.
And
he
the way
he's
being booked before it, it's not like he's, you know.
Yeah.
So
one street match that just reminded me of that I forgot to mention. I think directly before Lesnar, I think it was when he fought CM Punk.
Correct, yeah.
And that was, so in the bit, so wrestling is obviously infamous for having really poor taste, controversial, shocking, disgusting storylines. Like some of the ones they've had over the years have just been like appalling. But in the, by that point, you know, sort of wherever we're getting to like the early 2010s, it was like they were kind of cleaning up their act a bit for more of a younger audience. So they didn't really do that stuff anymore. So then Paul Bearer, played by William Moody, died in real life. Well, you know, actually died. You can never quite trust them, but it was real. So then they did like quite a moving little tribute. So you thought, oh, is the Undertaker going to come out and like break character? What's he going to do? And he just came out to the ring. There was, oh, the urn, which Paul Bearer used to carry and was always meant to be like the source of the Undertaker's power. It was in.
Are we an hour into this podcast? And you.
We haven't
just
mentioned
the urn.
The urn, of course.
Get the rain on this thing, Richter.
So the urn was in the ring already, I think. And it was sort of implied, well, the Undertaker just didn't say anything. He just did this like reverential kneel down and kind of held his hand up and bowed respectfully to the urn. And then it flashed up on the big screen, you know, rest in peace, Paul Bearer, a.k.a. William Moody, you know, passed away. And that was, it was like quite a nice touching little moment, and it played the Undertaker music or whatever. And then CM Punk came out, clean smashed the Undertaker in the head with the urn, and then tipped its contents all over him, which was basically implying that it was Paul Bearer's actual ashes. It's just
good
unbelievable
God.
That they did that. So that was like a
good
match,
God.
Which CM Punk did.
Really?
An interesting link as well that you've just reminded me of is that wasn't Brock Lesnar's manager.
Oh, Paul Heyman.
Paul Heyman was CM Punk's manager at the time, I think, of that match. So it's kind of a link there. Like Punk was Heyman's, under Heyman, lost, and then Heyman kind of went to and got Lesnar. Did Heyman say he brought Lesnar back, or was that just like Lesnar's back, so Heyman's going to manage him?
Isn't Paul Heyman also another lookalike of your dad?
Yes,
like a connection,
midpoint between the Undertaker and Paul Heyman.
Somewhere in between those two. Lies.
I was going to segue into what happened after the streak broke, tying a couple of strands together, because the Undertaker had this, like you said, he sort of, oh, well, he's lost the streak now, but he's going to come back and win. Then he's going to lose again. He keeps sort of implying that he's going to retire or that he's retired and then retracting it. It got a little bit like they kind of messed up his actual retirement, although his very, very last match was fucking ace. So we should talk about that at some point.
Yeah. But I tell you what, we've missed that. We're talking about Undertaker fiction. We've missed out the entire Ministry of Darkness.
Well, I was going to say about this, because I was going to try and bring it back and say, this is dark matter. What's like, what dark stuff has Undertaker done? And the Ministry of Darkness,
good one,
the whole fucking thing. He's my favorite version of the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He's crippled more people than polio.
Is that what he said?
So the Ministry of Darkness, it was... So after he had this feud with Kane, this was during the Attitude Era now, he kind of went away for a bit and then came back as like a proper Satanist. You know, they were pushing the envelope and he was a proper Satanist and he was taking people... He carved like a rune into... but they didn't even show it on Sky Sports. He carved a rune into Midian, who was like, used to be a Godwin, into his chest. And,
recruited
him. You know, he was kidnapping people and putting them on, not like crucifixion, basically, but it was on his
symbol.
Like, little,
it was a symbol.
Yeah.
Burning them on his logo.
And yeah, like his music kind of changed, and it was like somebody speaking in tongues, and then you know, that was fucking awesome. He had the brood in there, the ministry,
massive stable of
Gangrel and Christian and Edge as well, right? We're both Edge, part
Christian,
of it.
Edge and Christian, Gangrel, the Acolytes.
Viscera was in the brood. Was in
Viscera, 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 brood, yeah, Midian. And then it turned out that Vince McMahon was the higher power. It was really... me, Austin. But no, the Ministry Undertaker is my favorite, and that was properly dark. Like, they kidnapped Steve Austin once, and they were going to embalm him. And just stuff like it was just ridiculous, because this was like pure trash TV, and he wasn't really even. I don't remember any of his matches, but I think that's the best, darkest version of the Undertaker.
He didn't seem to wrestle very often, but he was champion
in the actual year, didn't
he? He was champion, wasn't he, through a lot of that.
And that was the same time that they had, around the same time as you had like peak Vince McMahon versus Austin, and Vince McMahon was, you know, he'd become an on-screen character, the real-life owner, chairman, whatever he is, and he was doing this probably not that much larger than life portrayal of himself as like this corporate scumbag. So he had the corporation, which was a stable of sellout capitalist wrestlers,
big boss man test,
brilliant. Yeah. And then you had the Undertaker's Ministry of Darkness. And it was kind of the first time they'd ever, probably not the first time ever, but it was the first time I could remember that it was like two groups of villains that aren't automatically on the same side because they're villains. So that was really cool, like two feuding villain factions. And then they cocked it up by just combining them into one thing called the Corporate Ministry that was crap.
I like the Corporate Ministry.
No, not a fan. Wasn't a fan.
I don't think it worked, though.
No.
I liked it when they used to come to the ring and they'd be like about 25 blokes.
Yeah, I mean... It was still entertaining TV at the time, but I'd kind of agree with John there that, they kind of cocked, because I don't think they ever planned for Vince McMahon to be the higher power.
No.
I think when they started, they didn't really have a plan, and it was kind of a last-minute decision. But that was quite cool as well, because that was when...
We even explained what that is. So Undertaker was answering to a higher power.
Yeah,
it was really
and
he started alluding to the higher power.
Self-explanatory, isn't it? I guess.
But they ended up explaining it that Vince McMahon orchestrated the whole thing as a way to get to Steve Austin because they were feuding,
kidnapping his own daughter,
and they were going to do a satanic wedding, and he bought like her teddy bear that obviously we didn't know as fans what the significance was. And he burnt it, and Vince is like, oh, my God. And it's like, that's when Stephanie was introduced. And it was really good stuff. It was great stuff. Yeah.
Great stuff.
It was, actually. Well remembered. I'm trying to think of any other really good sort of Undertaker storylines.
What about dark stuff?
Yeah. That's all we're here for, isn't it?
Supposed to be talking about dark.
We've just been talking about what a pussy is.
Is love of MMA.
One thing to think about, I guess, is how, like you mentioned it before, is his resurrections. And he has had multiple resurrections.
That's true. He's been resurrected a fair few times.
He's obviously pretty infamous for the casket matches. I don't know if they were a thing pre-Undertaker.
That's his specialist match, isn't
specialist,
it?
The casket match. Yeah.
That's quite dark in itself. He was a good guy when they first introduced him. I think the first one he had was against Kamala. He may have had ones on like house shows, I don't know, but
I remember him building the Kamala casket. Yeah. And he was building the casket.
He was building them, and that was before he kind of spoke.
He had to build Yokozuna's massive casket.
That's right. So that's another thing they would do, wouldn't it? So he would bury people and put people in the casket, and then if you closed the lid on it, that you won the match.
As brothers, did you never have a casket match against each other then?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
What did you use as a casket?
A casket.
Casket.
Very good answer.
We never had a casket match. We just, I used to just, you know, bump around, show them a few moves.
Choke slamming on the sofa.
Flying forearms, I used to do on Rex. That's my son's name. Jack, same thing. I used to do the flying forearms on him.
I used to use Diesel's jackknife on Sam until he got big enough to beat me up, and then I stopped doing it.
Now he jackknifes you.
No, he prefers. He prefers the big boot. So his final match was against AJ Styles, who is, he's no spring chicken himself, but he's kind of currently arguably
he's
the
43
wrestler.
Years old.
Yeah. Jesus, we're not far off that. So he's a really good wrestler. So if anyone was going to get a good match out of the aging, ailing, physically knackered Undertaker, you'd think it would be Styles. So it seemed like a good
and period. He'd already sort of gone on this documentary that we speak of. He'd already said, like, you know, he'd be honored to have a match with AJ. He's never wrestled him and he really appreciates his work. And I think AJ Styles is, he's recognized as one of the best, isn't he, in terms of a good hand globally. Like, fans recognize what a good hand is. I think wrestlers really respect his work as well. I think most people would think he could get a good match out of anybody.
But despite booking that, therefore, with seemingly that goal, they then binned off Adam.
So it's probably worth mentioning as well that Undertaker had gone through a series of shit matches. With not good hands, like Goldberg.
And also Roman Reigns.
Yeah. That tag
Bray
match
Wyatt match was shit.
Brothers
that tag match versus Michaels in, the return
in Saudi
Shawn
Arabia
Michaels.
Or whoever it was. Yeah.
I missed it by that much. Embarrassing to behold. Yeah.
And then the Goldberg thing was a debacle, wasn't it?
By this point, he's kind of, we're already unsure if he's going to, like, when he was going to try, because there'd been so many years in matches where I was like, is this his last match? Oh, it's not. And it's kind of like.
So I think probably what we were all thinking was, he's had those great matches with Shawn Michaels, put him in with the younger Shawn Michaels, which is AJ Styles, essentially. Like, he can bump around for him and flip for him. He's similar kind of wrestler. It'll be a great match.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that.
No.
Well, to be fair to them, COVID kind of came in and changed, I think, initial plans, because obviously...
With the crowd, with the traditional crowd, they probably would have done just a normal stadium match, wouldn't they?
But,
But what we got was what's been dubbed, as they become slightly more common, has been dubbed the cinematic match, which basically is a pre-filmed, edited a bit like a movie, and not presented as a wrestling match in a ring, but filmed as a kind of on-location fight scene. Basically,
Made famous by the Hardy Boys, isn't it?
In
TNA, that was kind of
Matt Hardy,
and that promotion does it, doesn't it? Is it MLW or
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is that one promotion that does loads of them. Matches, right? Interesting.
And so I think it might not be MLW, it might be another one, but
and then, so you might, in some ways, you think, oh, that's a bit disappointing. We're not going to get a proper match, but the spectacle, what they put together was just a. To be honest, quite comedic, but it's just really entertaining, good, funny. It started off with AJ Styles, who maybe, you know, he's renowned as like a great wrestler, but he's not really renowned as incredibly charismatic, but I think he's really funny. So the Undertaker's funeral hearse kind of pulled into this graveyard, some, you know, cloaked druid types opened the doors, took a coffin out, so, you know, this is the Undertaker's big entrance, and then AJ Styles popped out of the coffin and was like, nah, nah. You know, I just thought that was really funny.
And then his music hit.
Yeah, it stopped playing the Undertaker's music and switched to AJ Styles' music as if the music was in the graveyard. It doesn't make any sense. And then they brought back... Sorry, Jack.
No, I was going to say, I think that match definitely lent itself to Taker's aging lack of being able to perform live for such an extended period of time.
A few retakes, couldn't he?
Exactly,
a couple of days to put that together.
Yeah.
It's not dark anymore. We're going to have to stop filming.
Stuntman got involved.
Overall, I thought it was a really good, actually, a lot better than I expected.
It was a cinematic spectacle, but it was also sort of passable as like a movie fight as well.
Yeah.
So it kind of made sense.
Stay with me, boy.
there was a lot of trash talking, wasn't there?
I mean, just to give anyone who hasn't seen it, we were talking, you know, explosions. There were, you know, other people bursting into like a
gangsters.
hiding in the shadows. And then I think, if I remember rightly, didn't AJ Styles get the Undertaker in the pre-dug grave or in a open grave, use some sort of excavator, earth mover to start dumping mud onto him, only for the Undertaker to then create a meme while Styles is laughing, Undertaker's appeared, teleported behind him.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the match kind of started with him being like the American Badass Undertaker, which sort of a version of that. So the match kind of started with him almost like it was like a greatest hits package. He started with like the American Badass Undertaker, sort of that version. And then that bit when he gets buried and comes back, it was like proper Old school. Man Undertaker, wasn't it? Yeah. So it was great. It was a fun match.
Because the American Badass Undertaker can't teleport, but the other one can, as we all know.
Am I right in that, or have I misremembered that?
No.
I think it definitely showed like all elements of him, of his characters throughout the years, like the
wannabe biker, the wannabe MMA fighter, the wannabe
kind of
the wannabe corpse,
the wannabe alive.
And then at that point he managed to overcome Styles, lob him in the grave, and then I think he basically put about two spadefuls of earth on him, and then miraculously the grave was full. And then
didn't Styles do a carry style?
Yeah, well, no, he didn't at that point. He's just buried in a grave, and then it cut to the Undertaker walking off and just sweeping some like vines, that some ivy off the headstone. And it was pre-carved with like "Rest in peace, AJ Styles," and then Styles' hand was just jutting up out of the earth.
His gloved hand.
So, and then didn't he like
been there before?
Make the building explode? Like, didn't he do some like hand gesture in the building lit up? Poor boy, misremember that as well.
Summoned some flames. I think
like fireworks or something. Yeah,
wasn't it like his logo? He summoned his logo.
Yeah, that's
his emblem. Yeah. The emblem.
And then he drove off on his motorbike, didn't he? And then we never saw him again, except in that documentary where he made himself look.
Well, I was going to say there was one other small reference of him in WWE just after, which was in the, I think, Money in the Bank just after it, they were like, it was another pre-filmed, and it was him, they were like running up the building, and then AJ Styles like walked into the wrong room, and it's like a poster of The Undertaker, which haunted him. He's like,
and you walk into like a coffin room.
Yeah,
or something.
And then they had it was like a coffin room with like a poster of the Undertaker in it. And he was like, "Oh wait, is he coming back?" Like type gimmick. But yeah, that was the last we saw of him, I think.
But then it sort of seemed a bit stupid that they finally found this way that they actually could get a series of matches out of him that could have lasted another, I don't know, 5 years, just with him out once a year to have a pre-filmed, edited match where they can't go on. And then they just didn't do it.
Another 200 years that they filmed loads of them in a weekend.
They could have just done 100 WrestleManias worth of... Maybe they're going to bring him back.
But he officially retired later that year, wasn't it, at Survivor Series?
Yeah, they had a full-on ceremony.
Yeah.
It was 30 years since his WWE debut. Yeah.
It was a bit crap, wasn't it, because there was no crowds there.
No crowd,
I feel like they should have saved that for WrestleMania.
Or he should have just retired after he lost to Roman Reigns. That would have been still a credible lot. Because I remember the Raw after that, I watched it. And there was just like a massive 5 minutes of "Thank you, Taker." "Thank you, Taker." "Thank you." And then it blends into "Fuck you, Roman." "Thank you, Taker." "Fuck you, Roman." Then Reigns came out. He just said, "This is my yard now." And I was like, "That was brilliant. That is it. That's the passing of the baton." Then he came back again.
Do we think he'll come back again?
This is what I was going to ask.
Do you think he will?
I think he's going to make some appearance. Like, he'll make an appearance. 100%. There'll be... Whether he'll actually...
Until they
get
die.
Into a ring.
They can always, until they die. There's also come back.
In fact, this is one thing I forgot to mention, actually, is I never saw The Undertaker live, because I've been to quite a few shows over the years. And I actually had tickets to see him at one. And then he got dropped off the card and replaced by, I don't know, Shane McMahon or something, which was still good. But I never got to, I'd love it if it came back somehow that I could see. Because his entrances, we've not really mentioned, they're amazing. It's not really to see him wrestle, because I know it'd be crap now because he's old. But just to see an Undertaker entrance with the gong, the lights going out, the scary music, some fire somewhere, just would be really
lightning bolts.
Would you take a Tommy End?
An Undertaker Tommy End match in the Clapham Grand. Yes, I would take it. I would take that.
What, Vader?
Well, he's deceased. So,
so one thing actually we haven't mentioned is Taker's their use of sort of like supernatural and like special effects they did with Taker. So he for example descended to the ring on wires. He made the ring elevate and float with who was it that was in it now? Kurt Angle, I think, was in the ring, and he made the ring like dry ice come out of it, and they had obviously like some sort of
brilliant
bungee system pushing the ring up and down, kind of like a
four wrestlers, one in each corner.
He summoned a lightning bolt, hasn't he?
Yeah, plenty of like dodgy effects, lightning bolts. He's been in a casket.
We talked about this earlier. Dave was that Yokozuna casket match. He was put in the casket, buried.
Yeah.
And then the Titantron video.
Well, they set it on fire, didn't they?
Yeah.
Well, that was Kane, wasn't it? No, that was Kane later, yeah.
It cut to him inside, like a camera of him inside the casket. They levitated out of the casket, out of the top of the Titantron.
Yeah.
Remember that? I do remember that. That was that match.
The actual casket, like the physical casket they were pushing out, had like smoke coming out of it. Do you remember? Was that the one where it had like white smoke?
Yeah, that was that one. Eyes. And a few years later, when Kane at Royal Rumble set the actual casket on fire, that was mental.
Yeah,
he survived.
I remember
he busted out of a flaming one. So there was one where he came back and they brought a casket standing upright, had a special effect lightning bolt hit the casket, which set it on fire.
Brilliant.
And then he busted out of it as his like entrance, which I thought was amazing as well. Like,
yeah.
All I remember is, but if you're up there, then who's in the casket?
The DX casket.
Shawn Michaels, that was the best one.
Oh, cool.
It was Undertaker.
I can remember him like popping up out from under the ring and dragging.
Yeah, coming through the ring. Diesel, it was, yeah.
Oh, okay, was it Diesel? Yeah. And then, like, I don't know, some fire coming out.
He grabbed Kane as well. Did he grab Kane and pull him?
He might have done that to him as well, yeah. They probably
straight
done it
into the bowels of hell under the ring.
Under a wrestling ring. The bowels, as everyone knows, that's where the bowels of hell are.
Rumour has it, he wanted, when Diesel reappeared, he would have, like, white hair. Like, he'd been shocked.
It was a cage match against Bret Hart, and Undertaker popped out through the ring, pulled Diesel down, and then when Diesel came back, like, wasn't his pants were ripped slightly. So what was he trying to do to him? that was the Diesel pitched it. When he came back up, he would have had like white hair from like the shot, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, but why didn't they do that?
There are times
Vince said
when
it was too unrealistic or something.
There are times when WWE and Mortal Kombat, the crossover is like, you know, like fatalities and like that kind of weird, like so 90s, isn't it? Like a shock of white hair.
Although wouldn't Diesel technically have won the match? Because that used to be, his feet would have hit the floor, wouldn't they? From the cage.
Plus it's illegal to drag someone into hell. That's probably in the rules. You get disqualified.
But in the cage, WWF cage matches, it's about escaping the cage, isn't it? So
So Diesel would have lost then.
No, he would have won, wouldn't he? Because he would have escaped the cage. He would have been out of the cage
by going to hell.
By being pulled through the cage.
But doesn't the cage hit the ground?
No, not the old blue one. Remember Big Blue? You had to escape the cage, didn't you? Yeah.
I'm just wondering if his feet hit the ground though. Yeah, because if he hit the ground, of course, It's not Royal Rumble. Yeah, he would have, he won the match. You're right.
Well, ask him, because I've actually got The Undertaker lined up as a special guest for this night.
I was just going to quickly add on that.
Hey, anyone seen my balls?
Thanks for inviting
me. My wife's got them in her handbag.
I was just going to quickly add on that. On
top are you joking, Mark? I love you.
Come and beat us up.
On top of obviously his own supernatural moments and wrestling prowess, he's also been involved in a lot of other wrestlers, like sort of memorable moments. For example, throwing Mankind off the top of the Hell in a Cell.
We don't mention that,
He's been a main sort of stay in other people's storylines.
He is broken in half. He basically really killed
my God!
I wasn't sure when to mention this, but you know when you just remember something. We're talking about his darkest moments earlier. Remember when he hung the big boss man?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus. Oh, yes.
Yeah. And then they raised the Hell in the Cell, and he was like, that is for me, I'd say that's a step too far, but
yeah.
Tasteless.
Tasteless, yeah. Well, like, that's got to be the darkest thing, surely.
Yeah.
He killed the guy.
I would say.
For real.
He hung the man.
Any favourite Undertaker quotes that anyone... You've done your...
I've already mentioned it, yeah. I want to do it again, though.
People than polio.
Boy.
Sorry, it's important to put the boy on the end.
I've given more people than polio, boy.
That's one.
It's not really politically correct, so you might want to edit it out, but...
You didn't say it, did you?
You're just quoting him.
I did say it's my favourite quote, though.
he just spout a load of like waffle, basically, that kind of sounded a bit occult.
Well, that's my point, really. It's what saying really is. It's like Bray Wyatt, just talks a load of shit.
Our mutual friend Dave Roberts used to take the piss out of that one. He said, whenever it was, SummerSlam 92, where he's like,
standing atop this mess of carnage.
It's like really old. It doesn't make any sense.
Rest in peace was his.
I say that's going to be the catchphrase, isn't it? Like,
rolling his eyes back into his head.
Yeah,
which was quite an impressive feat that he could do that. I can't roll my eyes back into my head.
Did he ever say anything else?
I've got a page of quotes up on your.
Stay with me, boy. That's another one. Just boy. Calling you a boy.
They've always been like,
the fear of death is far greater than the death itself, but the fear of the unknown is the greatest fear of all.
It just doesn't
mean anything.
Classic. It's like Ultimate Warrior almost, isn't it? Like, bollocks. You're standing here, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. It's like old school wrestling. Nonsense.
My favourite quote is... Hey Vince, how was my match, bro?
Hey Vince, got any pointers?
Hey Michelle, hand me my balls.
constantly talking about the Undertaker's balls.
Hey Michelle, if I wrestle a match tonight, can we go to Denny's for dinner? I didn't think so.
I definitely feel like he is the emergency, like pull the ripcord if WWE is going badly, so like I feel like if Vince has a separate phone in his office, it's just like reserved for like the ratings are down this much. Shit, let me call Mark.
Yeah. Well, but that's why he appeared at so many WrestleManias after the Brock Lesnar one, because they just needed
the allure,
marquee matches, didn't they?
Yeah.
Especially in the old Saudi Arabian shit as well. He was main draw there, wasn't he?
And having said, we're all making a point. They're like, please don't come back. Don't soil your legacy anymore. But
it wouldn't bother me if he came back and just did something like, you know, made an appearance and
won
a match or, you know. But I wouldn't want to see another in-ring match.
Yeah. What if they pulled an AEW and had him as like a Sting-esque character to, you know, Sting is with
Christ.
Sting's kind of like the father figure to the, what's his name?
Darby Allin.
Yeah, Darby Allin. Yeah. They bring in some new guy. I mean, it would have been Bray Wyatt, but obviously no longer.
what advice is he going to give him? Like,
I mean, have him as like a manager-esque style.
Some
new wrestler they make some undead gimmick.
Mm. On Tuesday, you gotta go there for the specials.
What was advice about Denny's? Well, I
think sometimes you can buy sometimes one free. Sometimes my wife lets me go.
I think your match was good, but maybe you should ask Vince.
I don't really know.
I like the fact that we kind of alluded to the fact that he was a little bit, you know, he's
surprisingly
kind of doubting himself a bit. Yeah, quite modest guy. And now he's just a full-blown pussy.
We're going to watch that. I'm not going to document Jig. I liked it.
Yeah, me too.
Please.
Well, no,
come
this
on,
is...
the boys love me.
Completely deteriorated into
a mess of carnage.
Maybe we'll end our Undertaker discussion there and allow the tag team of the new Brothers of Destruction, Hayden and Jack, to give us their final pitch summary, unless you've convinced yourselves you don't want him to go in the Hall of Pain anymore.
Please let me in the Hall of Pain.
I think the character of the Undertaker, the one that stood the test of time, the one we're all talking about here, has enough darkness around him to cement himself a place in the Hall of Pain. I think he's done some nasty things in his time. We talked about his hangings and various other cripplings that he's done to people. But yeah, you're talking about a man in reality that's a larger life human being portraying the character and it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to talk about the difference where fiction starts and fact ends in wrestling. It's a bit easier to pick apart sometimes with your previous topics. You're talking about book or a film or whatever video game, whatever bollocks you talk about. Whereas this is a human being playing a character essentially for 30 years. So
God,
it's really hard to pick apart.
He went on QVC once in character, literally on the shopping channel with Paul Bearer peddling wares, and he was still in character for an hour on QVC.
And I think with wrestlers, like we sadly, sometimes the character doesn't ever end. It's not like a method acting, but these guys, they got nothing else.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's dark enough in itself. Yeah. But yeah, Undertaker, hell of a guy.
And an icon to several generations of wrestling nerds.
Too many generations to count.
No, yeah, just kind of the same thing that Hayden's saying, that basically if you just look at the character and kind of what the character's achieved over those 30 years and kind of how, I guess, especially in wrestling, he kind of was kind of a standout, a different type of, there wasn't really many other people like him or characters like him. He was that dark, demonic character, played well, stood the test of time, fan favorite.
There's no character in wrestling that stood the test of time as long as, I mean, there's been reincarnations, but the core of him has been, he's called the Undertaker. There's nobody, even like your Hulk Hogan's, whatever, like they're not The Undertaker's been the Undertaker from day one and still is today and might still be wrestling. We don't know.
Yeah.
Liam, you were the skeptic of our tag. What's our tag team called?
Brothers of Boldness.
Brothers. Are you convinced?
The character, the Undertaker.
How serious is getting? Hey.
The Ministry of Darkness stuff, for me, that gets him a pass into the Hall of Pain. But the man himself, nah. Not for me.
The critic. How am I going to fix this?
I'm getting ready for Anti-Natter.
Are you his really next? Really negative. Are you going to be his opponent at his next comeback?
Man, beat him up. Nah.
Liam would kick his head in. You heard it here first. Liam Martin was calling out the Undertaker.
I mean, he is a prick, but so are you. So yeah, he's been doing it long enough. He's had some great matches, a lot of shit matches, but he's had some good... he's in, of course he's in. Look at everyone else you put in. How can we not? He's great, really.
Have you ever not put someone in?
HP Lovecraft. Racist.
Yeah.
So we put Cthulhu.
So the Undertaker doesn't get anything? Yeah, exactly.
Quick.
Taking it.
End it.
he's not a racist. He's just a Republican. That's not the same thing.
Dead man gets in, but the American Badass doesn't.
His new gimmick of Republican doesn't get in. Yeah. On which surprisingly politically charged, controversial note, we'll draw a close to the 50th episode special. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Hayden. Thanks, Liam. Thanks, Jack, for making an exciting debut.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Pleasure, Ace. And
thanks, guys.
We'll be back in the near future because we've just got a few more episodes before it's the end of the series. but we haven't figured out what they are yet, but we will.
And remember, guys, rest in peace.
Oh, yes.
Could have ended.
Stay with me, boy.
We've all ruined it.
So there you have it, 50 episodes. Who'd have thought we'd have lasted this long, eh? If you enjoyed this particularly chaotic shambles of a show, then please, please do leave us a 5-star review. It would be hugely appreciated. Or get in touch with us on Twitter at @dark_natter, unless you are the Undertaker threatening to beat us all up and throw us in a casket, in which case I'll be happy to give you Liam's home address. Thanks as always to Liam, of course, for his faultless professionalism in only eating during about half the recording. And thanks to our guests, Hayden, friend of the show, friend of us both, and Jack, making his debut, did a fantastic job. Shameless plug for my own stuff as usual, please do visit www.john-richter.com, that's John spelled J-O-N, where you can find my works of dark fiction spanning multiple genres, including crime thrillers, techno thrillers, short horror stories, cyberpunk, and more. That is it from us here at Dark Matter Studios. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, try not to have nightmares, or if you do, make sure they're good ones.